Welcome to PJEFC's Pulpit Ministry, a ministry that is committed to the preaching of the Word to transform life.
It's hot, and I'm tired. I know it's always hot here in Jericho, and I'm probably usually tired as well. Many people don't know that by sitting by the roadside, day after day, can be tiring. Maybe because I'm not just sitting around doing nothing. I need to plead. I need to beg for attention. Look at me. Have mercy on a blind beggar. Looking helpless and waiting for people to notice that I'm blind and I'm in no way to earn a living like them. Hoping that, you know, every day they will throw me a coin or two. You see, because I can't see, I was always blind. I could see when I was younger, though never really well. And then once I became a teenager, I lost everything. It was frightening. I could see less and less every day until one day, total darkness. They used to call me Bartimaeus, but now I think I'm known more as the blind man. Jericho isn't a bad place to beg, because a lot of people are constantly passing through. Pilgrims coming down the Jordan Valley from Galilee all the way to Jerusalem. It is also not too cold here, even in winter. So that helps, because I don't really have much on me to keep me warm. But today, it's passing by just so slowly. It's like, goodness, only 2 coins so far. I've only received 2 coins. And suddenly, I can feel a piece of eaten fruit just landed on my cloak. Imagine there's a cloak here, lah. My cloak, my precious possession, my begging bowl. I'm thirsty. I drank all my water. I guess I would need to ask for help to get more. But wait, what's this I'm hearing? All of a sudden, a commotion? So many people talking at the same time. Lots of footsteps. Who is it? I asked. I don't know who said it, but as someone answered, Jesus, the Rabbi of Nazareth. Jesus, Rabbi of Nazareth. Oh, I heard of this name before. This is the man that's been going around teaching, healing. Healing? Yes, healing. So I found myself shouting for, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Have pity on me, please. I'm over here. Shh, stop it. You're embarrassing yourself. Why are they shushing me? Oh, because I'm probably an embarrassment to them. But no, I'm not going to stop. Jesus, I'm over here. Have mercy on me. Jesus, over here. Have pity on me. And I sense something change. He's calling for me. Yes, I connected with him. He has heard me. And he's calling me to him. So I try to walk towards his voice. And I can sense that he's looking at me. Although I can't really see him. I can't see him at all. And then I hear him. What do you want me to do for you? For a moment, I'm lost for an answer. Maybe because no one in my life has ever asked me this question before. What do I want him to do for me? Should I say to him, that I want him to heal me from my blindness. Sounds very exciting, but I've been a blind beggar as long as I can remember. I've never worked a day in my life. I've always depended on others to look after my needs. Do I really want to give it all up and be an independent working man with grown-up responsibilities? Have to work for myself, like others? That would be a huge change. Am I ready for this? All that flashes through my mind, but I found myself replying to Jesus, "Rabbi, I want to see. Yes, that is what I really want. I'm prepared for whatever consequences." Whatever the consequences is, whatever, I really, really want to see. And I think a big part of me don't just want to see with my eyes, but I want to also see with my heart, my soul. I want the freedom to see, especially if this Jesus, if he would make me see again. And then he replied, "Then be free. Your faith has healed you." That's it. Just as the last word leaves his mouth, I blinked. I see something. I blink again. Something is clearer. I blink 3, 4, 5 times. I can really see. I can really see again. I can really see. And I see Jesus smiling at me. And as he turned on his way, I found myself following him.
Thank you, Nick, for a wonderful, wonderful reading of Mark chapter 10, verses 46 to 52. Can I a little bit tone down a bit because I talk louder as it goes? Jesus' power to heal a blind man known to us as Bartimaeus. What do you want me to do for you? Can you imagine Jesus asking you that same question this morning? I wonder what you would say to Jesus at this point in your life. Most of our answers will be different than they would have been 5 years, 10 years, 15 years ago, and I think that's fine. But what would we say now? Right now, I ask you to take a listen to some responses from the young people.
I would ask for a life wherein I don't need to cry or be sad in ever again.
Can you help me pay for my shopping cart?
I would like Jesus to give me the power to turn everything I touch into good food.
I'd want good grades and a cure to cancer.
Jesus, make me rich.
To help me sleep better at night.
I would like Jesus to reveal his plans for me in the future.
If my life could be a little bit easier, like more smooth sailing, that would really be... That would actually make a lot of things way better. Because some kind of struggling, trying to balance everything.
What do you want me to do for you? A few weeks ago, when I looked at this passage in preparing for my sermon today, I remember I said to Jesus, I want to be reconciled to someone that I love dearly. And at a point in time, I couldn't imagine that's possible because, you know, how they say about reconciliation works both parties. And the other party clearly, maybe didn't want to have anything to do with me at the moment. It bothers me so much when I look at that question of all things. In my mind, the world on that day, I find myself saying that, Jesus, I want you to open a way for me to reconcile with this person. Would you make a way for this reconciliation thing to work? Lord, open the eyes of the other person. That's my deepest desire, which I believe also Jesus will for me to work for and to hope for reconciliation. This morning when I look at the question again, I want Jesus to do two things. I'd be greedy. Number one, I want Jesus to open all our eyes, yours and mine, to see him for who he really is, which Mark, who wrote this gospel, from the very beginning wanted us to see, that Jesus, this Jesus that we've been talking about through this series, this Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God. May God open our eyes to see him for who he really is. Secondly, I want Jesus to convict all your hearts to attend AGM so that we meet the quorum and then we can hear what God has done for us through the church last year and what God is going to take us on a journey in the year to come. What do you want me to do for you? Bartimaeus wanted to see again, and that involved a huge step. That step is trust. Trust that Jesus could really give him the sight that he asked for, and trust in where that healing will actually lead him. And this is one of life's biggest decisions, who to trust. I was watching this series in Netflix during Chinese New Year called The Alienist. I don't know how many of you watch it. Really, really good psychological crime thriller series. So there was this group of friends were trying to find a mad killer before he strikes again. He went around killing young boys, only young boys. He will gouge out their eyes and then cut off one of their palms and mutilated their bodies. They asked, how come? How did the killer get close to these boys? The answer is trust. These boys trusted this man enough to follow him to places where he would eventually kill them. Trust the wrong person, and you could even be harmed. Some of us trusted wrong friends, and they lead us astray. We trusted some politicians, and they betray us. Trust is crucial in all walks of life. When you hand over your kids to Sunday school, other than today, most Sundays, you trust the teachers to train them in the things of God and that it will not harm your children. When you give offering this morning, you trust that the leadership will spend them wisely on your behalf. When you go out and get your coffee and Milo later at the concourse, you trust that the water is not taken from the toilet bowl. Our whole social structure and how any one of us can live at all is actually based on trust. Trust is also at the heart of faith. And whether it's the story of calming the storm in Mark chapter 4, or Jesus healing the demon-possessed man, or Jesus bringing back to life Jairus' daughter that was said to be dead, and today's story of Bartimaeus receiving his sight, these are essentially stories about trust. Did Bartimaeus really trust Jesus to give him what he wanted? With that passage that we have heard from Nick, or you can read it when you're back home, it seems that he did. He asked for sight, and Mark suggests that the sight he found was both physical and spiritual. Now, how do we know that? Because when you read that passage, the original word in Greek is a verb called zozo. Repeat after me, zozo. Yes. Your faith has healed you. That word healed is a Greek word, zozo. And this word zozo, out of 52 times is used outside the gospel, 46 times that word refers to eternal salvation. So when Jesus say, your faith has healed you, not only Bartimaeus received the full gift, sight of healing from his blindness, he also received the gift of salvation. Not only was his external eyes were open to see Jesus, his internal eyes, spiritual eyes, the eyes that see the need of Jesus was also opened. And therefore, he was offered the gift of salvation. Because he trusted Jesus could give him what he wants, he received sight. And we read that when he received sight, he then received insight. And he began to follow Jesus. How many of us can relate to Bartimaeus this morning? Now, well, I can relate, at least physically. I was short-sighted since I was 18 due to too much reading. Unlike some of you, because of TV and gaming, it was reading. So I had to get glasses to read some more, right? And as I aged, the short-sightedness grew worse. My specs got thicker, and I believe very strongly they hide my beautiful eyes. So I started to wear contact lens. I thought that was the answer to my plight until when I had Micah. You know how a young mother have to wake up in the middle of the night to feed your children? So there are nights that Micah would cry and I have to wake up and I have to, you know, look for my glasses. And sometimes he cried like no tomorrow one. So you will panic and then you will wake up and you will like find your glasses and sometimes my specs will drop la, or I cannot find it la, or it's just somewhere in the room. And I remember telling myself, what a nuisance this is. I can't even attend to my child without struggling. So I share this difficult time of my life with the leaders of my church. And one of my former church deacon is actually an eye doctor. So he said, Pastor, you're very mafan, I pity you. So why don't you come to my clinic? I do LASIK for you. That was the first time I hear about LASIK. I don't know what it is, but because I trusted this church deacon of mine, so he said, come to my clinic. So the next week, I went to the clinic because he said he was going to do for me. Ma. So I went, but my church deacon didn't do it for me. He asked his eye colleague to do it for me. I can understand because after that he say, "Ayo, you know you're my pastor. What if anything happened? I blinded you." So he asked his colleague doctor to do it for me. Right now, I still remember the experience. You know, lying there. Those who have done LASIK. How many of you have done LASIK or cataract? You know, scared to raise hand. I know some of you. I visited you because you did LASIK. Raise hands now. And also cataract, right? I was lying there, the doctor say, look at the thing or whatever. Then I saw like smoke. And then immediately, everyone say immediately. Immediately after the surgery, I can see. Wow. Amazing grace. You all know how the song goes through. I was blind, but now I could see. It was such a freedom. I went back. I had a ceremony to throw away all my specs, all my lenses. And while not immediately, I left my former church after that. Just like Bartimaeus followed Jesus after he was healed, I followed the eye doctor who operated on me to this church. Yes, Dr. Chong Yifeng. If you, my former deacon, are listening today, it was your fault you didn't operate on me that day. I related to you my physical blindness. I wear specs, I wear contact lens, I do LASIK because I can't see. I was blind. Now, today you are wondering why I'm wearing this, but this is just purely, I think I look more intellectual, that's why I put it up. You all don't agree? Now, I know not all of us experience this kind of physical blindness, but we could be blind in other areas of our lives. You could be thinking about your future, your studies, your career, your love life, your finance, your children, your faith journey, and maybe you feel that you can't really see what's ahead, and you feel as blind as Bartimaeus, and you hope that someone can just help you see clearly again. Now, that's why I think many of us can relate and resonate with Bartimaeus' encounter with Jesus. We know what it's like to sit in the dust, like a beggar needing grace. We call out desperately for help and shouting even louder when others would drown out our cries and tell us to keep quiet. Well, we can learn many things from this passage. When I was looking at it, what jumped out to me, and I think if this passage has anything to say to us today, is this. It's okay to cry out for help when you have a need. Now, for Bartimaeus, healing does not come easily for him. Before he received his sight, his healing, he had to overcome the crowd's determination not to have him heard. He has to persist in calling out, Jesus, have mercy on me. Jesus, son of David, look here, I'm here. Come to me. He has to persist in calling out to Jesus until he hears Jesus call him to come to himself. Now, what I want us to observe in this passage is Bartimaeus' determination to be heard. And this is not unique here in Mark's Gospel. We see the same determination in other stories of healing, which today, Mark chapter 10, is the last story of healing in the book of Mark. All the stories of healing in the book of Mark, we see the same determination of the recipient. Elder Gowing started on us on Mark 2. You remember the story? The friends, they must force their way through a roof to bring their paralyzed friend to just get a touch from Jesus. That healing was made possible because these friends were so, so determined to see their friend get help. We see the determination in Mark chapter 5 with the woman with the bleeding issue for 12 years. She had to disregard the law of no contact with people, and she persists in wanting to get a touch from Jesus. So she disregards that law to get that touch from Jesus. The same chapter, we read that Jairus must ignore the mockery of others who say, she's dead. She went to Jesus after the healing of the woman of 12 years of bleeding. Someone come to him and say, she's dead. Don't bother the teacher anymore. He has to persist in believing and taking Jesus for his word to say, do not be afraid. And he got his daughter back. Mark chapter 7, the Syrophoenician woman who will not give up hope that Jesus will heal her daughter, even though initially Jesus said he won't. He rebuffed her, but she persists because she was determined to want Jesus to heal his daughter. And Mark chapter 9, desperate dad was so determined to have his tormented son to be delivered from the evil spirit that when Jesus' disciple failed to do so, he didn't give up. He was determined to overcome his unbelief. And that day, Jesus set his son free. Today, what we have just heard is Bartimaeus' determination to want a touch from Jesus. Can you relate to Bartimaeus? His persistence, his determination, he's intentional. He doesn't hesitate. He doesn't get distracted along the way. He didn't say, maybe not today, so many people, the crowd is so loud asking me to keep quiet. Maybe not today. Maybe I just wait for another day to call on Jesus. No. Not only is okay for us to cry out when we have a need, and I really like this. Bartimaeus tells us that we can shout all the more. Verse 48. He shout all the more. He didn't care. He didn't say, paise la, paise la, paise, paise. He didn't let himself feel ashamed or embarrassed or fear that Jesus would turn around and find him a nuisance. And due to his persistence to seize that moment with Jesus, for Bartimaeus that day, Jesus stopped. Jesus called him to himself, and Jesus took time with him and healed him. It's okay to cry to God when we have a need of God and for God to meet our needs. I take comfort in knowing that our Lord Jesus, when he was on earth, he showed the same vulnerability. Soon, in less than 3 weeks, we will come to the part of the gospel when Jesus faced the darkest time of his life. The hours when he was among the olive trees of Gethsemane. The scripture tells us that Jesus was sorrowful unto death. And what did we find him do? We find Jesus reach out to God. He prayed, he cried, he wept. Jesus needed God's strength to go through what he must for mankind. And the Son of God cried out to his Father. It got worse a few hours later when Jesus was hammered mercilessly on the cross. And when he was hung there between heaven and earth, with heaven silent, yet again we see the Son of God with every ounce that is still left, that he still got left in his body. He cried out, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. My God, why have you forsaken me? There is no shame in crying out to God to help us make sense of the darkness, of the lostness, of the silence we sometimes go through in life. In fact, God welcomes us. We cannot read the Bible and do not get this truth, that God invites us to cry out to Him, especially the book of Psalms. God welcomes us to cry out to Him in our anguish, in our desperation, in our grief, frustration, in our helplessness. So, the problem is seldom God when we don't cry out to Him. God isn't the one who will shame or embarrass us or hinder us from coming to Him. It's often either ourselves who don't want to cry out to God, or like Bartimaeus, sometimes we encountered people around us that would be like the crowd in Mark chapter 10. Shh, He won't hear you. Stop crying. Enough is enough. What else do you want? Why do you cry out some more? And we get distracted with these voices in our head, telling us and making us feel like as if we are a nuisance for crying to Jesus for help. Corporately, this passage has so much relevance for us. Because I think sometimes the church could be like the crowd in Mark chapter 10. Instead of offering compassion to those who are in need, we become uncaring and we ignore the cries of the people who are in desperation. Not only that we don't lift a finger to help them and those who are in need, we try to even silence their cries. I want to bring us back to 2020, PJEFC reaches out. I wonder how many of us remember we embarked on this project. Can I see a show of hands? It's just merely 3 years ago. No one remember? Yes, very good. Very good, yeah? And some of you were together with us when we journeyed on. This is early on, I think after 2 or 3 weeks when the lockdown, when the first lockdown was announced, we thought that it's going to be just for 6 months. Manatau, 3 years still talking about pandemic. Now, I show you this because I felt when this was, after this was launched for a month or so, I felt I was becoming like the crowd in Mark chapter 10. You know how like we put 5 names there? I don't know whether it's apparent to some of you. We put Pastor Jeremy, Pastor Alexa, Gong Wing, James, and Ngat Hong. And I don't know what happened that we put our handphone number all big and all sent out to the entire Malaysia. And people started to call. And some calls come in almost every day, I think. That night itself when it was sent out, the afternoon itself when it was sent out, nighttime already received a lot of calls. And the calls just continue to increase. I do not know whether it's the volume of the call. I'm not sure whether it's because of the frequency of the call, because the same person can call me and Gong Wing and Pastor James and Jeremy all at the same time. Or the regularity of the call, or the urgency of the request. There was a breaking point in my life, because I was the only woman. Do you see that? So women call women, no? And so the men all don't get calls one. He can't even say no because he knows it's true. So the thing is this, it comes to a breaking point that I just say to myself, I have enough. I'm not going to pick up any calls anymore. These people call me 3 minutes ago and expect to get the food right away. What's this? I find myself have thoughts like, this is not my problem, man. If they cannot reach me, it's okay. They will call the next one, which is Jeremy. Easy to pronounce. I have all these thoughts of, or excuses that I tell myself that someone will attend to them. Enough is enough. When are they going to stop asking for help? Give already 3 weeks ago and now want to demand some more. I was irritated at the voices calling for help, and I find that I distanced myself, didn't want to pick up any more calls from strangers, numbers that I do not know. And I think that week, Gong Wing would know because that week he received a lot of calls because I refused to. Do you know what I have become, church? I became desensitized to people cries for help, and I ignored their needs. Instead of offering compassion, or at least a listening ear, I silenced the cries of people who need grace, and in the process, I believe I left people more helpless than when they first approached me. I think it was also that month I realized that portfolio of welfare has to be under Pastor James, the most compassionate pastor of all. Have you ever found yourself behaving like that, brothers and sisters? This is not good. When I realized that, I confessed to God for my lack of love. I repented of my hypocrisy. I have people hold me accountable to never silence the cries of the helpless. We are supposed to love God, love, and make disciples. And to be able to do so, we cannot be like the crowd in Mark chapter 10. There are people crying in desperation all around us that need a touch from God. And some of them might not be as loud as Bartimaeus. Will we be the church that will be quick to listen and attend to their needs? Take time to listen to them, even and especially the silent cries. Will we pause and respond in love? If you have a need, it's okay to cry out for help. And if you hear a cry for help, would you be your brother, your sister, your neighbor's keeper, and offer kindness of God to them? At this juncture, I would like to invite Joshua, my brother-in-law, to come and share a story of him crying out.
Suddenly, Jesus is to appear in front of me and ask, "What do you want from me? What do you want me to do for you?" I think I will pause and may not be able to give an immediate answer. But if Jesus would have appeared to me 8 months ago, my immediate answer would be, "Lord, heal me of my pain." You know, towards middle of last year, I developed this very painful injury at my lower back called the slip disc. It is a herniated disc, a bulge out disc that pressed, bulge out from my vertebra bone and pressed onto my lower spine nerve, causing severe shooting pain from my lower back all the way down to my right leg. The pain was so severe that it affected my entire being. I couldn't sit for long. I couldn't stand straight. I stand like a gorilla at that time. And I can barely walk more than 10 steps. Sleeping is a torture to me. I couldn't sit on my sleep on my back. I couldn't lie down on my chest. And I could only sleep in one posture, which is on the sideways. Not this side, but this side. And that has caused me numbness and pain on my arm. I can only sleep for 2 hours every night. And the pain wakes me up every night that literally I was crying for help in the middle of the night. And doctor gave me 2 options. Number one, to go for surgery to remove that herniated disc. And I can also seek for alternative treatment like physiotherapy, chiropractic, etc. And that moment, I want to be healed of my pain. But on the other hand, I'm also like Deacon Teck Lim, that, you know, fear to death when you think of that. Imagine myself going through that surgery on the herniated disc. You know, we all men, sometimes we look strong outside, but inside, when doctors say you have to go through surgery, right, we can really freak out. I mean, I cannot talk on behalf of all men, but I can say on behalf for Teck Lim and myself, right? You know, it's like, you know, going through surgery can really freak us out. You know, what happened? This kiasu me, right? When doctors say, okay, go through surgery, you know, I didn't stop there, you know. I went for second opinion, third opinion, fourth opinion, fifth opinion, you name it, from chiropractor, physiotherapy, tita, and acupuncture. I've tried almost everything. With that constant pain I was enduring day in, day out, with sleepless nights, not for 1 day, 2 days, weeks, but for months, Of course, it sent me literally crying out to God for help, especially in the middle of the night, where you were awakened by that shooting pain. And every night, I would tell myself, I don't care tomorrow morning, I just want to brace myself, brave enough to go for that surgery. But when morning comes, when the pain was not so hurtful, and you know, you would tell yourself, no, I can endure another day. To cut the story short, I did not choose that surgery option, and it took me a few months to recover. But throughout this, I have learned and appreciated a few things. Number one, pain, physical pain, is very real. But it's okay, because we can cry out to God. It is okay to cry out to God, because God is always there in our pain. Because pain is not the final outcome of our affliction. It's the journey when crying out to Him, when there's nothing else I can do but just to depend on Him, it assured me again that God is always there despite our pain. And this journey is real. Number two, it is important to belong to a community, especially those who love you. My CG members, thank you, Annie, for that hip pat. It's really helped. Pastors who visited me, family members, my sister-in-law, my brother-in-law, my godson, and my SN team member who said, don't worry, Joshua, we will take care, you know, stand in for me on my schedule. Those support are really important and meaningful. They mean a lot when you are hurting and feeling down. Hence, it's a lesson for me that caring and praying for people that are vulnerable and hurting is important. And of course, Genesis 2 says, it's not good for man to be alone. I'll make him a helper, a companion. Thank you, my wife, yeah, for taking care of me throughout this journey, my faithful driver and helper in times of pain. To God be the glory.
Thank you. Gabriel, huh? It's okay to cry out to God, and God is there in our pain, as Joshua said. It's an importance to plug into a community that loves you. Not like the crowd in Mark chapter 10, but like Tropicana Indasiji, who hurts with you and hold you when you're vulnerable and when you're in need of support. What do you want me to do for you? Bartimaeus said, Rabbi, I want to see. Jesus said, go, your faith has healed you. And immediately, when he received his sight, we find that Bartimaeus followed Jesus. He has asked rightly. He asked for that one thing that would allow him to follow Jesus. If he had asked for riches, money, that wouldn't have done it. If he had asked for the generosity of people to give him all he needs, that would not have done it. It's only the gift of sight that enables him to follow Jesus. I think this is one of the most important questions that God ever asks of us, church. And that one question also that we most frequently give the wrong answer. We do ask for all the wrong things in life. Just in Mark itself, there are a few examples that show us how often we do that. In Mark chapter 6, there's this story about Herod asking his dancing stepdaughter the same question. What do you want? I give you anything that you would want. And she wanted the head of the John the Baptist. Mark chapter 15, Pilate asked the same question to the crowd that was going crazy. What do you want me to do for you? And they asked to release Barabbas and to crucify Jesus. In fact, just before this encounter with Bartimaeus, if we read earlier, verses 35 to 45, we read that James and John, Jesus' BFF, went to him and requested him whatever they asked. And Jesus asked us the same question, what he asked of Bartimaeus. What do you want me to do for you? And James and John said they want to sit on thrones with Jesus. One left, one right, to reign with him in triumph. In other words, James and John want to be number one. They want power, prestige, and glory. And by Jesus not able to grant them what they want, and Jesus teaching after that, the rebuke after that about servanthood, it implied to James and John that they had asked the wrong things in life. What do you want me to do for you? How we answer this question will reveal whether we want death or life, or whether we want to be healed like Bartimaeus, or we like John and James, who just selfishly want Jesus to do our will and fulfill our own desires. Would you think now about yourselves? What would your response be today when Jesus asks you, what do you want me to do for you? Do you know what your real and deepest needs are? Today I invite you to go beyond the surface and let the Spirit of God to search your hearts and get past all the superficial wants and desires, and a faith like Bartimaeus, ask for sight from God. I would like us to dedicate the following 5 minutes as a sacred moment between us and God. This is an invitation for those of us who have a need, a burden, or something that have been weighing very heavily in your heart, and you desire for God to come near to you, to minister, to affirm, to do a miracle, to bring light and life to a difficult situation. It could be you're facing something similar to what I am going through. Maybe you wanted reconciliation with someone. Or you could be facing a mountain of your life that are growing bigger by the day, and you have absolutely no idea what to do with it, and you feel defeated by it. Could it be an illness of the body or mind? Could it be that you are burdened with someone that you have been praying for a long time to come to know Jesus, and he or she has not made that decision? Are you concerned about some of your relationships? Maybe you have a problem with some kind of addiction, eating, drinking. Maybe you are asking if you are making a difference in this world. Maybe you are asking right now, what is my life adding up to? I'm not sure. God, would you show me? Would you open my eyes to see what I really need and to follow you? While posture of the heart matters more to God than the posture of our body, I think it's good collectively, corporately today. If today you are the one that Jesus is speaking to, what do you want me to do for you? And you want to bring to God that something that's weighing in your heart, I invite you to stand where you are and lift up our hands to heaven as a sign of humility, sign of dependence, sign of trust, and say, God, I come before you, I bring before you our need, my need. And I want to ask by faith, fully trusting in you, that Lord, you hear me, you love me, and you will answer me. If that's you are today, that's who you are today, I invite you to do that. Stand where you are, with your hands lifted before God, and just bring before God your want, your need. Let us do that as a church this morning. Come, unpretension. Take away our pretension and come to God. And hear Jesus saying to you this morning, what do you want me to do for you? Would you ask, brothers and sisters, and a faith that God knows and God hears?
You have been listening to a sermon from PJEFC. We hope that you have been blessed by the message. For more sermons, please go to www.pjefc.org/sermons. Love God, love people, and make disciples.